Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
Brandon, one of the big stories coming out of tonight's SmackDown is Brock Lesnar officially entered in the Rumble. It makes it feel more prestigious. I don't think I would put money on Lesnar winning. That doesn't seem to be the direction they're going for WrestleMania. But as a late addition to add some star power to it, I think it was a good move. How about you? What do you think?
Yeah, I think the move to add Lesnar to the match is certainly overall a positive. I thought the way that they got there was a little bit convoluted and sort of almost like a comedy of sort of like lesser characters that I came away from this segment not feeling like they did a particularly strong job of putting over Bobby Lashley or Brock Lesnar, but instead that they kind of continued down this path of hurting Austin Theory. I mean, to parade him out there and have him first be interrupted by New Day, who have certainly fallen down the ladder, and then The Miz, who hasn't really had much in the way of, you know, credible segments as of late, to then, you know, getting taken out by Bobby Lashley and more or less being an afterthought to setting up this program between Lashley and Lesnar, which I assume culminates at WrestleMania. It just felt like another kind of strange night for Austin Theory after one on Raw as well. Despite retaining his title, he, you know, kind of is made to look like a fool at the hands of Brock Lesnar. So I wasn't a big fan of the segment and for a number of reasons, but I think that the end result, which is, of course, getting Lesnar in the Rumble, is a good thing for the match and the star power of the match especially.
And what's interesting is they have Theory saying again at the beginning, the champ is here. They continue to at least lay the groundwork, plant the seeds for a John Cena Austin Theory match.
Definitely.
And the idea that they're associating him with Miz and even comparing the two at this stage for Miz. And I mean, having some Raw wrestlers present adds a novelty to the show. You know, they're just getting into town, you know, a day early and making up for some people who weren't there. And you know, that had a novelty to it, and I thought was, it added a novelty to SmackDown, seeing some people, as Cole said, I told you it's Royal Rumble season, implying anything can happen. And Miz talking about never winning the Rumble and this being a time he wants to. I mean, I like that, too, because, again, it's, most people listening to this show kind of get it. You know, I mean, well, and if you're an exception, give us a call. But I think you get it. Like, Miz isn't winning the Rumble this year. He's not going to headline WrestleMania. The Rumble winner wins WrestleMania. Miz is not going to win the Rumble. That's not going to happen. But at least engage us in a story where we get a number of people making a case so that the, kind of the masses, the more casual observers who aren't really thinking, I can eliminate almost everything because the stipulation is the winner wrestles at WrestleMania. You want to give people a story to believe in, an option to consider, and not just have it seem fait accompli that it's just going to be Sammy or Cody, or now, you know, in their mind, maybe Lesnar gets added to that list, or some unnamed wrestler. So in that sense, I like that, and I think it's set up a little intra-match angle that they can do with Miz and Theory. Well, they ended up teaming together, working together to try to take on New Day, but they can get those wrestlers involved in a spot in the match for a little intra-match angle where they, you know, presumably eliminate each other in some form or fashion. So that's the purpose of the segment. But you're right. The end effect you have is you've got Theory associating on a lower end where it seems like the effort the last few months has been to bring him away from the selfie taking next big thing and have him be more serious, less comedic and less absurd that he is being pushed as a top star. He's had these good showcase matches. He's had good efforts on good performances on the microphone. And it does, once again, kind of reduce him down a little bit visually. I think he can overcome it. I don't think it's a big deal in the long run, but in the short run, it's a bit of a setback image-wise. I get why they did it, but it is a signal that they're not fiercely protecting Theory at this stage, and they're not looking at him as somebody who's going to be a true top guy, you know, in the first 6 months of this year. You know, they might continue him on that path later.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not even someone who's particularly high on Theory. It was just – it was striking to me because they didn't do anything to differentiate him from the competition in the ring. They they sort of put him on an even playing field with The Miz and with New Day, which at this point – I just don't think with how much work they put into that character you want to be doing. And, of course, they certainly presented him as being well below Bobby Lashley and Brock Lesnar, which I have less of an issue with because I think both of those guys are being pushed at a more significant level and are more important to the product right now than Theory is. But to have him sort of cast aside along with The Miz and New Day is what I found sort of most alarming about that segment. But, yeah, I do agree that giving a character like The Miz motivation for his participation in the match, even though most people watching are not going to think that he has a chance, is a good thing overall. I think that they've done a fairly good job this year of positioning a lot of the men to have stakes, even if it doesn't appear as though they actually legitimately have a chance, at least presenting them on TV as wanting to win the Royal Rumble and believing that they can win the Royal Rumble is important.
Yes. Yep. All right. Well, let's pause and introduce the show, and then we'll get the calls early here and see where things lead. This is sometimes the last episode before pay-per-view. It doesn't have any major angles, but they did hit – you know, they checked the boxes in terms of some of the key things on the show. We had LA Knight and Bray Wyatt interacting, a little appearance by Uncle Howdy at the end. We had Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn and Solo Sikoa and the Usos interacting, and then the KO solo main event with some ramifications for the KO Reigns match. We had sound bites regarding the Rumble. We had some attention paid to next week's SmackDown with the tag team semifinals setting up next week's finals, and also a Charlotte Sonya match for next week's SmackDown being booked when Charlotte volunteered to defend her title to, you know, shut up Sony once and for all or something along those lines, and Pierce agreed. So number of good talking points, and we will get to those as the show progresses here with calls and emails. Got PW Torch contributor Javier, who will be joining us for a roundtable segment a little bit later also to kind of have a final Rumble analysis segment late in the show here, and our ultimate predictions, I guess, for who we think will win and why. But first things first, let's introduce ourselves. I am Wade Keller, the editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and pwtorch.com, and the host of various podcasts, including this, the Wade Keller Post Show, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday night, and the Wade Keller Podcast, including our flagship edition, which featured Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net earlier this week. We previewed the Royal Rumble, talked about Raw 30, and much more. Check that out if you haven't yet. It is our blue logo show. Just search Wade Keller in your podcast app. And if you haven't yet, subscribe to this show, the red logo show, and then also the blue show. I also host a variety of VIP exclusive podcasts that included this week, Everything with Rich and Wade, with Rich Fan, Pro Wrestling Torch columnist, as a star of that podcast. And then The Fix with Todd Martin. We talked about a wide array of topics, including previewing the Rumble, Raw 30, and much more, including the hopefully someday award-winning Fix Mailbag segment. That will also include this weekend's post-Rumble roundtable. And the biggest fan of the Royal Rumble among PW Torch contributors is Kelly Wells. He has made it very clear it's his favorite match. It's his favorite part of pro wrestling. He rewatches old Rumbles every year. This is his favorite time of year. He'll be joining Todd and me on the roundtable tomorrow night to review that PLE, as we now are supposed to call it and ought to call it. Brandon, you've got the other voice, by the way, here that you'll hear is Brandon LeClaire, or that you've heard so far, a PW Torch contributor, and he will be covering the Royal Rumble live on pwtorch.com with his report alongside my report to give you two perspectives. And it's hard to keep up on these shows, Brandon, as you know. So together, hopefully we cover everything. Brandon, welcome back to the Coast Share.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here. Yeah, it is. It's actually the first coverage I've done in a couple of months because WWE, of course, didn't have a pay-per-view in December. I attended Survivor Series in person back in November, so I haven't been at the desk covering in real time since early November. So I've got to knock the rust off, and I'm
your contributor card almost expired.
Yeah,
gotta re-up.
I've still been appearing on the post shows though. Come on.
Oh no, I know.
I've got to knock the rust off and do it with one of the hardest shows of the year to cover. I remember last year was my very first Royal Rumble coverage, and I changed the formatting halfway through the Women's Royal Rumble because I realized what I was doing was not sustainable, and had to make a note at the bottom that, you know, apologies for changing my formatting, but I not keep up with this. So I think I remember what I did for the matches last year, and I'll make sure to start that with the first one this time so that it stays consistent throughout. But I'm looking forward to it.
Excellent. So yeah, this is the Wade Keller post show following SmackDown on January 27th, 2023, and we got so much more to get to. We invite you to give us a call and let us know what you thought of tonight's episode. The number to call is 347-215-8558, 347-215-8558. I do want to, oh, and our email too, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com if you got thoughts on tonight's SmackDown or on tomorrow's Royal Rumble, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. I do want to note that on the PW Torch Daily Cast feed, that's our third free feed, or one of four free feeds that we have, on the PW Torch Daily Cast, we rearranged the schedule a bit this week because of the Rumble. Greg Parks will be hosting the Royal Rumble live post-show, a format similar to this. You can find a link to the live stream and a different phone number and email for the Royal Rumble post-show in my coverage of the Royal Rumble at pwtorch.com tomorrow. So look for that, and then join Greg Parks live. He'll be taking calls. And then that means normally he'd be on Sunday night, but we've moved the PW Torch 90s past cast to Sunday this week. Normally that's on Fridays, but Nick and Tom's Intercontinental Adventure, which normally is on Saturday nights, we moved to tonight, Friday night, because they did a mailbag segment previewing the Royal Rumble. So we wanted to get that up on a timely basis. So check that out. Nick and Tom are followed by a 5 years ago Rumble post-show call-in hosted by Greg Parks. To subscribe to the PW Torch Daily Cast, a different show with a different theme and different host every night of the week, search PW Torch on your podcast app and subscribe. You'll see the Daily Cast logo pop up. You'll also see the PW Torch VIP logo pop up. It's black and gray, and that features occasional VIP freebies, free samples of our VIP podcasts. And it also, within that app, if you use the Apple Podcast native app, you can actually use your Apple account and upgrade to get all of our VIP podcasts throughout the week with just a single click using your Apple account. That's a new thing last year, and we invite you to take advantage of that. It is a pretty frictionless way to get access to all of these free shows with the versions where digital ad inserts and in-house plugs are removed, and also all the VIP shows. So check that out. Just search PW Torch, subscribe to the Daily Cast for free, and subscribe to the VIP free sample feed while you're at it. Okay, I think that takes care of the needed business for this busy weekend. So I hope you will be checking us out on Saturday night at pwtorch.com and then join Greg live for the post show. So let's start going through phone calls here, and we will start with Sean from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Sean, we're going to play your jingle.
Let's go to Tennessee. We're talking to Sean. Let's go to Tennessee. We're talking to Sean. Talking to Sean. Talking to Sean in Tennessee.
Ah, I'm so relaxed. Sean, welcome. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, first, Wade, it's good to talk to you. I'm very excited to hear Javier's roundtable because I'm very intrigued to see what he thinks about the Rumble and kind of what he's been thinking. I've missed him lately. I know he hasn't been able to call in as much, so I'm intrigued to see what he's got to say. And Brandon, it's always good to talk to you, my friend. How are you, sir?
Good. I am. I'm still taken aback by your intro there. That's the first time I've heard it live. So I'm just a little starstruck.
You're here.
No
You're
reason
here
to
in
be.
Person for it.
Brandon, there's no reason to be. Come on, I'm just another person, just another guy out here, just doing my thing, just talking wrestling.
All right.
But no, I will say, Wade, you know, I'm glad you got all that stuff out there because there's going to be tons of great coverage, and I'm looking forward to hearing you and Greg and everybody just talk about all the Rumble stuff. So it's going to be really fun. And I actually got to – it was funny, Tom was on his YouTube doing a live little Rumble with Nick talking about the Rumble, and so I got to kind of chat with them, so that was fun getting to talk to them again. They're both great. They do a great job as always. But, no, as far as tonight, I think it was a really good really good show. I mean, they did the Rumble thing, talking about all the numbers and stuff with that. I always liked that video, talking about, you know, just all the stuff about the Rumble and eliminations and, you know, Rumble winners that have gone on to win the title. Like, that's always cool, you know, to think about. But I wanted to first talk about the tag team stuff. I know it's not really necessarily about the Rumble per se, but just about the show, you know, itself. I thought I didn't like I want to know what you guys thought about this. I really didn't like the Drew and Sheamus. I know they got beat up by the Viking Raiders. You know, I get that they're pissed off that they got attacked by them. But to just, like, to give away your tag team title opportunity just to go get them, like, you can get them, I know they're going to say, oh, we're too beat down to compete, and I know that's probably the reasoning they're going with, and we're trying to, you know, they're so beat down, we don't think they can do a good job. Number one is Hit Row. Hit Row's not very good, let's be honest. I think even if you're beaten down, you could probably still beat Hit Row, in my honest opinion. Hit Row is just not a, you know, they're okay, but, like, Drew and Sheamus are clearly better than them. And two, I just didn't like them running away and not getting their, you know, having a chance to get, you know, I know it's the tag team titles, but they still, what did you guys think about that? I didn't really like that part of it. So what did you guys think about that?
Yeah, I agree. I thought it hurt the prestige of the tag titles, and I think they could have done a better job explaining it than having Adam Pearce just go. They volunteered to withdraw from the tournament because they wanted to go find the Viking Raiders. I mean, we all do dumb things for personal reasons when something, you know, professional is on the line, I guess. That seemed like one of those things that we wouldn't – in theory, they should regret that decision because getting a tag team title shot should mean more, and they can take care of the Raiders later. Brandon, how about you?
Yeah, it wasn't good. The part that stuck out the most to me in this segment was when Wade Barrett rightfully complained about Adam Pearce's decision to replace Drew and Sheamus with Braun Strowman and Ricochet. Michael Cole responded with something to the effect of, why do you have to bring logic into this? Can't you just have fun? And I think my eyes, like, fully went to the back of my brain. Like, I think they had rolled all the way back. Because, I mean, come on. Are you kidding me? Adam Pearce is supposed to be a babyface. And at worst, he's, you know, like a neutral character. But more often than not, I just find that he undermines his own credibility and does really, really stupid things that sort of let WWE off the hook for lazy booking. And for a while, they got away from that. And they've reintroduced him to kind of allow themselves to slip back into that pattern again. And I expect now that every time Adam Pearce is on my screen, something illogical is going to happen, and they need him to be the one to explain it away. And again, tonight they did it. And Drew and Sheamus, of course, they're guys who love to brawl. They love to fight. Of course, they're going to want to go after the Viking Raiders and try to exact some revenge. But there's so many other ways that you can do that. They can go get the Viking Raiders after their match. Adam Pearce can call off the match and postpone it until later if he believes that Drew and Sheamus are not currently able to compete. They could flip-flop the two tag matches, just put this one later in the show. There's just ways to get around what they did, and they just went with the laziest option to continue a feud that I don't really think has any steam to begin with. And then, yeah, I mean, Wade Barrett is completely right. Why do Braun Strowman and Ricochet deserve to enter a tournament that they did not, that they were not initially in, did not qualify for, and now they're in the finals?
Very well put. And you laid out several examples of how they could have gotten around this better. As you were talking, I thought of others. And the point is, they didn't even try. You know, they just didn't. They had a disregard for any sort of logic, and it cheapens the format of the tournament, and it makes everything seem like a farce. And I would say if you can avoid that, it's better. Just flat out, it's better on a pro wrestling show if it seems like your authority figure is not rewarding people arbitrarily and reacting to things illogically and then just putting the heat on Pierce.
Like they could, there's a scenario where this is like, okay. And I think that is where you reverse this and the baby faces are out in the ring. The heels can't compete for whatever reason. They're replaced by another heel tag team and the baby faces still overcome and win because at the end of the day, that means the baby faces overcame the odds and the guys who were unfairly inserted into the tournament don't advance. In this case, you have baby faces who didn't earn their way into the tournament defeating a heel team who did earn their spot in the tournament. So it just doesn't work.
You could have had a frazzled Pierce after flipping the tag matches and going, let's get the other match out after the break, and then they redo introductions. Then they try to go to the Hit Row Drew and Sheamus match later, and Pierce is flustered because he can't find Drew and Sheamus anywhere. And he goes, I don't know where they went. Nobody knows. They're brawling with the Viking Raiders somewhere in this building. We don't know. I have a match to fill. We're live on Fox. And then Braun and Ricochet are just chatting off to the side. And Pierce can just like point at them and they look at him and like, we need bodies in the ring. I'm rewarding your guys. Like there'd be more logic in that because it would seem like it was done under duress and the people closest to him or, you know what? I mean, you can alter that in many ways and none of this is perfect, but at least it wouldn't just seem like, oh, Drew and Sheamus just gave it up. You know, they just gave up their opportunity. It just cheapens the whole thing. And so, yeah, I mean, like I said, there's half a dozen ways they could have made it seem better. It still wouldn't have been perfect. There's flaws with all of this because they just didn't need to do this.
And then you have Pierce backstage later on in the night separating KO and the Usos and saying, I can't lose another match tonight. Like, he's always just the guy with egg on his face. Like, he's...
All right, go ahead, Sean.
Yeah, and that's what you said about the babyface. You know, you have the babyface tag team coming in that doesn't earn it, but then you have, you know, like you said, you have the other babyface team that's like giving away an opportunity. So you have two babyface teams that look dumb in the process, and it's just like, oh my gosh, like come on, like why are we doing this stuff, WWE? I like WWE, but they do stuff that just makes you kind of shake your head, like oh my gosh, here we go again. But I wanted to go back to the Imperium Legato match. I thought that was a heck of a match. That the Vinci powerbomb from the top rope, that was impressive. I was like, wow, I did not expect that. That was a pretty cool move. And I just thought, you know, even though Legato did lose, I thought they got something in losing, I guess. I mean, because I don't like the heel-heel matchups. They're always kind of weird for me. But, you know, it was fine in this instance. I mean, it was a tag team kind of match. I mean, it was fine. But it was like, I think Legato gained something. What do you think about that match? And are you fine with Imperium, you know, winning and then did to help Legato, even if they lost, is it still – kind of build them up a little bit?
Yeah, I'd say the only – I thought the match was good. I got a little preoccupied with the finish where Vinci's knee was injured, so he couldn't go for the cover after a top rope power slam on Wild. And he was like, oh, I can't make the cover. My knee hurts. So he crawls over and takes in his partner. And like 10 seconds later, he's lifting Wild on his shoulders so Kaiser can leap off the top rope with their flying uppercut double team finisher. And then he went back to selling the knee afterwards. So I give him points for selling the knee afterwards. But if you can't even roll over to cover your opponent after a big power move, and 10 seconds later, you're supporting him as you lift him in the edge. That was just a low IQ moment. It's like you got to be ways around that sequence. So that threw me off. That aside, yes, this was four good athletes, really filling the time that they had well. Brandon.
Yeah, I thought it was really good too. The only drawback, I think, like Sean has already mentioned, was just the heel versus heel dynamic, which again it does work fine because it's a tournament, so you know it's not like it's quote unquote the company just setting up this match for the sake of setting it up. It's just how the tournament shook out. So in those instances, I think it's okay to go forward with a heel versus heel dynamic. It did seem to hurt the crowd reaction a little bit, but the match was strong enough to keep them invested, and I think that Imperium is a really strong team that should be a focal point of that division, and I really hope that there are bigger things coming for Legado del Fantasma, because so far their journey on the main roster has sort of been the guys who make other people look really, really good in the ring, and they sort of get a little bit of the rub, but ultimately come up short. And I do think that faction, especially with Zelina Vega, it could be something a lot bigger. I think that they're kind of being held back a little bit by the fact that Imperium is sort of taking up that mid-card heel stable role with Gunther as the Intercontinental Champion, because in another world where Gunther is off doing something else and Imperium is off doing something else, it would make a lot of sense for them to be in that spot and for Escobar to be the Intercontinental Champion.
Sean, back to you.
Yeah, a couple of just quick topics I wanted to bring up. The first was going back to the beginning with the Reign cross match. I mean, it was – okay, I'm kind of torn. I'm torn in a lot of ways here because, number one, I think the match was fine for what it was. I think it was a pretty good cross match. It was good. I mean, Rey makes you look as good as you can, you know, at his age. I mean, it's amazing what Rey can still do at this point. Me is a, like, if I'm a younger person, I'm like, man, I'm glad, you know, Rey won this match. You know, just, but again, by a roll up, I don't like that. And then I still think, no matter how much I like Cross, I feel like if you're trying to do something to build Cross up, I still think he needs to win here, guys. I think he needs to get a win here. I think he needs to get a strong win. I think it helps him getting a win against Rey. And I think they've built it up to, like, I don't know. Again, I love Rey. Been great for a long time. I just think Cross needs to win. Are you guys with me on this?
Brandon, what do you think?
I have not been an advocate for Karrion Kross, and I still am not. But if WWE is keen on pushing him, then I absolutely agree. I mean, for my own personal perspective, I value Rey Mysterio even at this point in his career over Karrion Kross, so I'm fine with them going in that direction. But I 100% think that if they view Kross as something and they think that they can get something out of him going forward at, you know, upper mid-card or even main event level, then, yeah, he has to come out on top of this feud. Rey Mysterio has not been presented in a way that would make me believe that someone who they view highly would be sacrificed to Rey Mysterio at this point. So, yes, if they want to get something out of Kross, I think that he did have to win that match. But I also think that this was them kind of kicking the can down the road a little bit, because Mysterio got the quick roll-up victory, which is sort of WWE's way of saying, hey, this isn't over, there's more to come. And then on top of that, Michael Cole, as Mysterio was celebrating atop the ramp, Michael Cole mentioned that the rivalry may be renewed in less than 24 hours at the Royal Rumble. So to me, that says that they are going to come face-to-face at some point during the Rumble match, and I suspect Cross will probably eliminate Rey and lead to another match.
Yeah, I didn't have as big of a problem with it as I think you did, Sean, and Brandon, and I feel weird saying that I'm like a bigger Cross fan at this point than I had been, or an advocate for his push. But I didn't, that's because I think he's been doing a better job lately. I mean, the issues I had with him have abated, are not there. Like, he's not making, you know, trying to scare little girls in a haunted house with mean faces anymore. He seems more grounded and more well-rounded, all the things I complimented him for. And I thought in the ring he was a good foil for Rey, and I think Rey is a good opponent for him because Karrion's not a giant, but he wrestles like he's, you know, 4 or 5 inches taller than he is. And so Rey's a good opponent for that, and I thought it was, you know, a nice match. I mean, it was, you know, 7 minutes or whatever with a commercial break in the middle. There wasn't a ton to it. I thought the 619 spot was pretty contrived. You know, oh, I've stumbled, and now I've landed in perfect position to take a 619. And knowing I'm in perfect position for a 619, even though I basically just stumbled into this spot, I'm going to lay here until Rey kicks me. I think they could have done a better job there, just like in the finish to the Imperium take. That said, I don't think a roll-up finish is a decisive finish, and we complain about it when there's an indecisive finish to a match where you're looking for one. So it'd be hypocritical to say, well, this hurts Cross, because it doesn't. It doesn't. It's just a roll-up. It doesn't mean Rey, you know, beat him up. It's Cross underestimated him and got leveraged down in the midst of some offense, and now he'll get his revenge at the Rumble. I'm okay with it in part because I think Rey needs wins now and then, and this was not a particularly meaningful win, but the absence of losing to Cross means he's got to win, and I think the absence of getting just crushed by Cross does give Rey a little bit of legs as a character, and I think Cross will be fine, and I don't think they're trying to protect Cross so that he's a credible opponent for Brock Lesnar. Like, I just don't think that's what they have in mind for him. So, and even if they are, I don't think this finish, you know, overrides other things that they can do, including tomorrow night, to kind of, quote, get his heat back. So I was okay with it. Sean, back to you.
Yeah. Yeah, I was, you know, and like I said, I I'm with you, Wade. I think Karrion's done better lately. Like, I think to me it was a low bar, and I think, Brandon, you're probably with me, the bar was kind of low, but I think he's exceeded it to some level lately. I don't know. I just think go strong with him and at least see what he can do. I mean, if he flops, he flops, but at least, you know, kind of go with it. I mean, if he eliminates Rey at the Rumble, that's fine. But if he beats him in a match, it's kind of like, okay, you know, it's 50-50 booking still in my mind. Like, you win. Like, okay. I mean, I just want somebody to go over, I guess, stronger. I guess that's my view on it. And I wanted to say, too, I don't like when baby faces, like when Rey sees Scarlett on that side of the ropes and he runs to that side of the rope, it's like, you know, Scarlett's going to try to interfere in the match. Like, why do you go on that side of the rope? Why do they do – they always do the spot where he's on that side.
Because it's opposite to the hard cam.
Right. And it's just like, oh, my gosh. I know you have to do it, or you're trying to tell that, but it's like, oh, it looks so dumb. It's like, you know it's going to happen. But Rey's just great. I love Rey. But the other thing I was going to bring up, too – was I have to get my Rumble predictions. I was going to throw it out there. Like, for the men's, you know, I think they've done such a really, really poor job, especially in the women's Rumble. I just think they've built that up so poorly. It's been really kind of hard to – just nothing really – they haven't really talked about it in any way other than maybe Raquel a couple times. And I mean, Rhea to me is going to win just because I think she needs it the most. I don't think Becky really – it doesn't help Becky at all. Like, Becky's a star. She's going to be fine. They're going to do something with her. She's going to have a big WrestleMania match wherever they decide to go. Rhea, I think, really, really needs it, and I think she's doing a good thing right now, especially with Judgment Day. And with the men, I just think as much as I want Sammy to win so bad, I really do, but I just think they're going to go with Cody, and it's fine, too, because, again, they're telling a really good story with Cody. I think Cody's in a great spot when he comes back. He's going to be beloved at this point in this WWE run. I think him against Roman would be a big WrestleMania match, and I think the fans are going to be into it. I think, you know, him winning even if it's just for the WWE title, whatever it is, wherever they go that way, I think Cody, it'll help him big winning the title. I think it'll be a big thing for him, and then we'll see what he does from there. I mean, he could ruin it. He could not. But so I wanted to hear what you guys were thinking about that. But, you know, again, Javier, I want to hear your roundtable, man. I appreciate you. All the callers, I hope you got some good stuff. I'm ready for it. And Wade, Brandon, I appreciate you guys taking my call, as always.
Thanks, Sean. Appreciate it. Always good hearing from you. Brandon, is there anything you want to respond to there? Especially the hype for the Women's Rumble kind of jumps out as something we haven't covered yet. And I'm curious for your grade and your evaluation of that.
Yeah, definitely. That's the first thing that I latched on to as well, because I definitely agree with Sean. I think they've done a really poor job building that up and establishing legitimate contenders to win. I mean, we're talking about Rhea Ripley and Becky Lynch, but we're not talking about either of them really, because WWE has sent out, you know, clear smoke signals that, hey, we're really on a ride with them. It's just because they're the only two women that make sense and the only two women that are in position to win the Rumble that are currently being pushed. And I don't think that that's a thing that you want to have. I mean, a couple of years ago, or was it last year when Bianca Belair won? I don't remember if it was last year's Rumble or the year before. Do you?
I think it was last year.
Okay. So when Belair won, you know, she had a lot of momentum going into the Rumble, and it felt like she was the really clear favorite. And sometimes the really clear favorite is just the right choice, and Belair was the right choice. It made sense. The fans enjoyed it. And that's exactly what we got. This year, while I do think that Rhea Ripley is probably the best choice and the clear choice, I don't think that the journey that she's been on necessarily screams Royal Rumble winner. And she hasn't really positioned herself, be it in promos or just week-to-week presentation, that she is on this, you know, definitive path to the Royal Rumble. She's been so preoccupied with the Dominic stuff and with the Judgment Day stuff that the Royal Rumble has kind of been an afterthought to her. The promo that she gave tonight, the little backstage segment that they did for Digital, was really the first time that she's talked at any significant length about wanting to win the Rumble. And I didn't think the promo was that good. She had a couple of, like, flubbed lines that didn't work very well. At one point, she said, like, 2023 is going to be the year of Rhea Ripley because I am Rhea Ripley. And I was just like, oh, man. Like,
yeah.
Come on. Like, that was pre-taped. So, I think she's still the pick, but I just don't find myself getting that excited about it. And that's not to say that I don't think that she can't be put in good position for WrestleMania. It's just that it doesn't seem all that big right now.
It'd been fun to see Rhea and Dominic being obnoxious about her chances to win and playing off each other. By the way, ask me again when Bianca won the Rumble.
When did Bianca win the Rumble?
2021, 2 years ago.
Okay, so who won 2022?
Rousey.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Yeah.
For everyone yelling at us. Okay. Well, let's... let's keep rolling. I'll add this. The Women's Rumble, people were very excited about it when that got announced, and they started doing it back at, 2018, I think?
Yeah.
And it does feel like an afterthought in terms of the hype and the booking. And I think it would be good. I know they like their surprises, but I wish they would have weaved in one or two women from the past were going to be in it, and gave us a little bit of a notion that maybe somebody other than a very few suspects on the main roster can win, and just tell a few more stories. You know, whether it's Lita or Trish or whomever. If you have, it's like, it's not a surprise. We know they're going to fill out the Rumble with women from the past, and then maybe this would be the time to introduce somebody. Maybe you know, the downside is it's premature, but somebody from NXT who kind of makes a case for themselves too in some promos, just to pay some lip service to the idea that there's a handful of potential winners that you're familiar enough with to imagine that they might win. And I think they could have done that.
This would have been a really good spot to introduce Mandy Rose if that hadn't gone south.
That's true. Yep. All right. We'll keep going through culture. We'll go to Jay in Michigan next. Jay, thanks for calling. What's in your mind about SmackDown tonight?
Hey, thanks for having me, Wade and Brandon. Can I just chime in a little bit on the Women's Royal Rumble talk that you guys are kind
of
finishing up? So I think Rhea Ripley is the clear pick, and I do think that they have maybe not so overtly positioned her in that role. And also I will ask, you know, you guys, like, being that she's a heel, do you really, really have to, like, solely invest in the journey to, like, you know, this big moment? You know, but with that being said, I will say, like, they planted some subtle seeds, you know what I mean? Like, there's been some backstage moments where she's crossed paths with Bianca Belair and kind of stared her down where nothing was said, but everything was said. So I do think they've been positioning her, and I do think that they've been building her strong. And, like, maybe the Women's Rumble is a bit of an afterthought, but I do think that they have, just due to the roster, but I do believe that they have positioned her fairly well and fairly nicely to win the Women's Rumble. And I think that I also think there's a chance that she wins the Women's Rumble and then enters the Men's Rumble as well. So I think she's been set up pretty, you know, pretty nicely.
All right.
Any
thoughts, Brandon?
No, I certainly think that there. I definitely think that Rhea has been strongly built, and she's in a good position and probably in the best position to be the favorite to win the Rumble for the reasons that we talked about. And yeah, I mean, you bring up a lot of good points regarding her her, you know, backstage altercations or run-ins with Bianca that have sort of been – that have sort of flown under the radar. I just feel like it's less even about Rhea than it is about – the way that they have spoken about the match, or really the way they haven't spoken about the match. It's been such an afterthought, and they've announced, you know, much fewer names than they have for the men's. And it seems always to be like they're talking about the Men's Royal Rumble and all of these superstars who are going to be in it, and Cody Rhodes is returning, and now we have Brock Lesnar, and then they're like, oh, and by the way, there's the Women's Royal Rumble too. So that's kind of where my issue has been with that side of things. I just wish that they had done more to make it feel like it was on the same level of as the men's, because there have been a couple years in the past where it has felt like a much bigger deal.
All right, Jay, it's the same argument. It's just add more women to the list. You know, that's the main thing. I don't have a huge critique of Rhea Ripley's push and build. It's just I like to have 4, 5, 6 names. And in the case of the Women's Rumble, you got to work a little harder because they're not all on TV every week, building up a credible track record. You could imagine them winning. So a little extra effort on that front is what I'm asking for, more than a critique of the Ripley push. Go ahead, Jay.
Yeah, I understand where you guys are coming from on that. I just think that the women's division, by and large, there's just the depth is not there. So, you know, maybe they focus on strengthening the women's division for this year, and then by next year, hopefully, we have a more marquee Women's Rumble. So I will say for tonight's SmackDown, I think with all things considered, I feel like they put together a show that progressed things and, you know, was a good build into tomorrow night. I don't know. I don't want to critique it too much, man, because, you know, I feel like the KO solo match, they could have really got something more out of that down the road. But I do also understand, like, they made it make sense when KO brought up the path, and he's just excellence personified when it comes to playing back the path. But you know how he spoke upon, you know, I need to take the entire bloodline out of the equation because they've cost me so many times before. So I really respect that. But, man, I think they put together a pretty good show under the circumstances there. Only thing else I really end with, man, is, like, I'm really, really excited for the Rumble. You know, I'm always going to be excited for the Royal Rumble. It's always going to be my favorite show. I felt like last year's Royal Rumble just was a total disappointment. But I think that, you know, I feel like we got to – I mean, I think that there's, like, two obvious picks for the Men's Rumble in Cody and Sammy. But, like, my question would be, I feel like there's a large contention of people that just don't feel like Sami Zayn versus Roman Reigns is worthy of a WrestleMania main event, which I totally disagree with. And I think that I don't see, like – The way that this Sammy story is just being told, man, and how it's been told for so long, and the nuances of the bloodline, man, it just feels like that would be a bigger match for Roman with the story behind it as opposed to Cody, because, yes, Cody was injured and he's on a road to recovery, and, you know, he's coming back, and we know his mission statement, but I don't feel like there's ever been like this energy between him and Roman. Like, yeah, he can win the Royal Rumble and go challenge Roman, but is there really a story there for him to take Roman out of that spot? I don't know. I feel like whether Sammy wins or not, and, you know, I mean, I've batted around these ideas a lot, you know, with you guys, but, you know, about Sammy maybe down the road. But, like, just at the pure core of it, I think that the story is so much better Sammy Zayn would be to get Cody Rhodes
okay.
to that point
gotcha.
To actually take the title.
Yeah.
Yep. So,
yeah, bro, I get what you're saying, Jay.
You probably got a lot of calls.
Yeah. Thanks, Jay. Appreciate it. Yeah, Brandon, I mean, there's all this momentum and all this investment in the Sammy-Roman dynamic, and they're going to have a match at some point. I think I made this case earlier in the week. I think it was with Jason on the flagship. I think you've got to have Cody win win the Rumble and go on a Mania, because if Cody faces Roman on an event that's not a WrestleMania, I think in a meta sense it'll seem like, they don't believe in Cody. And in this era, I think that's part of getting a push is the perception that you've been chosen to be the guy standing in the ring opposite of Roman. And I think they need to build Cody up into a centerpiece, top babyface for the next handful of years. He's not young. By wrestling main eventer standards, he's not young to suddenly move into the main event spot, but he's young enough that you can get, you know, 3 to 6 years out of him if he can stay healthy, being a top guy. And I think there's an untapped upside to Cody, and he had real positive momentum before the injury. So looking even beyond what makes most sense for what viewers and fans want for this WrestleMania is you want to utilize the WrestleMania brand to elevate Cody so that you have that top babyface attraction who stood opposite of Roman at WrestleMania. Second of all, I think Sammy's going to be just fine either way, but I don't know that WWE perceives Sammy as a guy for 3 to 6 years who's going to be a centerpiece babyface. Maybe Sammy is in 2 years a bigger babyface than Cody. I don't think WWE is expecting or planning for that, but that doesn't mean they aren't high on Sammy. I just think they think Cody fits that slot a little more naturally for what they do. So it's an interesting choice, but to me, there's a freshness to Cody and Roman standing opposite of each other with Heyman in the mix, cutting promos for 2 months, that might not be there with Sammy. Plus, you have Sammy and KO against the Usos, or whatever, however they get to wherever they're going, there's other options for Sammy in the bloodline at Mania, which then can lead to the Sammy-Roman match being delayed and the storyline, in a good way, being stretched out, because I'm not ready for them to move on yet. So, Brandon, those are my thoughts. How about yours?
Yeah, I've gone back and forth a little bit this week about what I want to see and what I think is the best option, and I think that I have settled pretty close to the way that you're feeling, and I think that's because I think that Sammy's journey right now is about obtaining it's about obtaining acceptance from Roman Reigns. And if he doesn't get acceptance from Roman Reigns, does that automatically mean that he is opposite of Roman Reigns? Does that mean that he is Roman Reigns' enemy? I think that eventually Sammy becomes a natural opponent for Reigns and other members of the bloodline, because I do suspect that they will eventually turn on him. And then, of course, Sammy has reason to go and get revenge. But it doesn't seem particularly likely to me that the bloodline turns on Sami Zayn entirely at the Royal Rumble. I mean, they're going to have the match between Reigns and Kevin Owens, and maybe something happens with Sammy during that then leads to the turn. Maybe he, you know, nearly costs Reigns the title, or he messes up in some other way. Whatever the case may be, I don't think that by the time the men's Royal Rumble match rolls around, that Sami Zayn is going to be in a position where logically his character would want to pursue Roman Reigns, Right now, there's no reason for Sammy to pursue Roman Reigns. He's still in the good graces of the Bloodline. He has not been kicked out by Roman. He's in the good graces of Jay and Jimmy, and he knows that Solo is essentially, you know, could attack him at any time, but it will be at the discretion of Roman. He's got Paul kind of nipping at his heels, but none of that is a motivating factor for him to jump into the Rumble match and win the number one contendership. So if Zayn were to jump in the Rumble and just happen to win, what's the explanation there? Does he go to the Bloodline and say, well, you know, it's an opportunity and I won it. So, you know, is he going to say that he'll lay down for Roman? I just don't know how they get there at this moment. I think that Sammy is going to benefit from being strung along by the Bloodline a little bit longer and then earning a title shot against Reigns or just a match with Roman Reigns in a different way if Reigns is to lose the title to Cody. On the flip side, when you talk about the positives for Rhodes, when Cody was heading into that Hell in a Cell match with Seth Rollins last summer, everyone was talking about it like it was a foregone conclusion that he was the only guy on the roster right now that made sense to take the title off of Reigns. And I don't really think that that has changed since he's gone. I mean, we've seen Seth Rollins turn into a babyface again without actually officially turning. You can argue that he's a hot character right now. I don't really see it. Drew McIntyre has clearly been defined down and not someone that is at Reigns' level. The Brock Lesnar story has been told. Bobby Lashley has not really been put in a position to be someone that would take the title off of Roman Reigns. Austin Theory is not there yet. So who does that leave if you're looking around? I mean, it's Cody Rhodes. And if you're not going to do it at WrestleMania, does it really have the impact anymore? I mean, does it have the impact that it could by having it happen at the biggest show of the year?
Yeah, that's why Cody's going to win and why he ought to win, or why WWE at least thinks that's the right choice to make for now. There's so many things they can do with Sammy and that can make sense and build to a big show, including perhaps SummerSlam. And I don't think they have to rush it. I don't want Sammy to seem like he was bypassed because they don't think he's worthy of being a top babyface, because I'm a huge Sami Zayn fan. Part of why I don't think Sammy needs to win the Rumble and headline WrestleMania is because I think he'll be fine without it, and I'm not sure Cody will be. And that plays into it.
I think there is also a really interesting avenue that they can take, and that is to maybe at some point in the night have Paul Heyman pull Jimmy, Jay, Sammy, and Solo aside and give them a list of particular people to watch out for in the Royal Rumble. And those four guys are being sent into the Rumble not to win, but to make sure a certain number of people don't win, because those are the people that Roman Reigns does not want to face. And we can find out later on, but one way or another, that one of those guys was Cody Rhodes. And, of course, the Bloodline fails to stop him from winning.
All right, very good. Let's keep rolling through calls, and we'll go to Mike in Atlantic City, New Jersey next. Mike, welcome to the show. Good to hear from you. What's on your mind tonight?
I guess, how you guys doing, first of all?
Good.
Good.
Good. Is it cold up there, Wade?
Oh, God. Yeah, it was warm in the 30s last week, and now it's single digits for a few days here.
We got hit back-to-back with two storms within, like, 48 hours of each other.
Here in Minnesota and the Twin Cities, we've got, like, record snowfall. I haven't seen snowplow piles from plowing parking lots as tall as this, maybe ever. I mean, it's been a long time.
Wow.
And you know, Wade, there's been no snow in Jersey this whole winter. It's like
that's
record,
a bummer.
Actually,
if I want to go through winter, you know, one of the positives is looking out the window at the beauty of the snow and, you know, kids playing outside and sledding and you know, my dog likes to climb the snow mountains and look around. It's like there's, you know, as long as it's not just below zero, it's fun, but you've got to have snow for it to work.
I like fresh, clean snow, but then, you know, once it gets plowed, you put sand down, it's just gross.
Yeah. Anyway, what else is on your mind?
I guess to follow up what you guys were talking about with the men's rumble, I think Cody's going to win. I really don't see Sammy winning. Like you said, Brandon, it really doesn't, you know, it really doesn't fit into the story. I don't know how you get there with him winning the rumble. Like, would he just lay down, like you said, for Roman then? So that's a good point, Brandon. I don't think that proves even more like what I'm saying is, like, I don't think he's going to win the rumble, even though I wouldn't have a problem with it. I do get excited about Sammy and Reigns having a main event at WrestleMania, but I don't think it'll happen. But I think they got to be careful. Like, if Sammy's going to be in the Rumble, I think they got to keep Sammy and Cody far from each other, because otherwise
they
has the potential.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, like, well, I don't know, Wade. Do you think that once it gets down to, like, the last four or five people, you think they'll have Cody and Sammy, like, in that last five? I think they're risking it there.
No, we talked about that earlier in the week. They've got to keep Cody and Sammy apart in different sections of the Rumble, because you don't want Cody's win to be something fans resent because they were rooting for Sammy near the end. So if Cody's going to win, I expect Sammy to be out, you know, 20 minutes before the match ends.
Yeah, do you think Sammy would be in there early, or do you think he would have, like, a mid-number, like 15? Or...
Yeah, it can go either way. But, I mean, there's just so many ways you can tell the story with the Rumble. You know, going, oh, he should enter early or he should enter in the middle. It's like you can make either way work. I don't have a strong opinion on that. My hunch is he'll be out there long enough to make the Rumble feel like there was a Sammy chapter. I'll put it that way. I don't think he's going to come in at 15 and get knocked out 2 minutes later. Although they could do that. You know, I mean, if you got enough other things going on with the Bloodline where it's just, like, you know, sort of deflating and it forwards the Sammy storyline for another day. I mean, you could do that too. So, yeah, I don't think you can narrow it down. Brandon, any quick thoughts on that?
No, I think that the most important thing is going to be making sure that he is a pivotal point in the match. And that doesn't necessarily mean him going deep or being in the final four. But what I mean by that is that they need to advance the story somehow. There needs to be a morsel of something to give the fans the indication that they're still all in on this Sami Zayn story, because otherwise I think it'll be perceived as casting him aside in favor of Cody Rhodes. But if you do something within the confines of the match to further the angle, I think that fans will be able to get behind that. They'll get behind whatever they do with Sammy, whether it, you know, be it something that elicits cheers or boos, whatever it is, just something that will further the story and get people interested in what the next chapter is going to be on Monday or Friday, and then bring in Cody and let them have their moment with Cody separately.
Okay, let's keep. Well, Let me get Mike back on. Go ahead. Yeah, Mike, let's keep the conversation going. Anything on follow up on what Brandon said or a new topic?
And I'll touch on the Women's Rumble. I remember, I think last year too, the Women's Rumble a lot of years has been better than men's. Like, there's just a lot of fun spots usually in the Women's Rumble. I mean, you know, even though, like, you just get, like, a lot of NXT people and stuff like that, it's still usually a fun match. And really good, too. A lot of good action. But, yeah, this year, like, the men just seemed way more exciting. But I would say, yeah, Ripley's definitely going to win the Women's Rumble. And Liv will be number one, I assume. But, I mean, they didn't mention her tonight. I found that weird. But Liv will be number one. They'll probably have her go 20, 30 minutes in there. But I don't know, if Rhea doesn't win it, I'd like to see, I don't know, what do you think of Naomi possibly being a surprise entrant and her winning the Rumble? I think there's a really good chance of that happening if Rhea doesn't win it, actually. Naomi would be my second pick to win.
I don't think Naomi's been anywhere close to getting a push that in WWE that would suggest that she would get that moment and that win. I don't think they think that highly of her. And, like, it's not like, it sounds like a dig, but it's just like, I don't think they see her that way. It's like, you know, if you want to date a friend and they're like, oh, I don't see you that way. Like, I think that's how WWE is with her. We don't see you as a main eventer. And given the way she left and the fact that it would send a message that, you know, we got Naomi but not Sasha back, you know, it's going to draw attention to the fact that Sasha's not there. So, Mike, I hate to break it to you, but I don't think we're going to see that. And I don't think WWE would seriously consider doing that. And I think, frankly, a lot of the women, or a handful of women who look at what Sasha and Naomi did and disagree with their decision, would take kindly to that either. I just don't see it happening. Brandon, how about you?
Yeah, it might be unfair criticism, and I really don't know, but to me, the walkout of Sasha and Naomi always felt like the follower in that situation rather than the leader. It seemed like it was Banks almost, you know, it was Banks's deal. Banks was upset. She convinced Naomi to be upset. They walked together. And then it was sort of kind of looking around like, you know, Banks has all these opportunities and Naomi really doesn't. So I just don't know how much fans are clamoring for Naomi to come back. Obviously they're not going to be upset if she comes back, but clearly of the two, they're looking for Sasha, and we know that it's not going to be Sasha. So without that, yeah, I think bringing in Naomi draws attention to the fact that it's not Sasha Banks and they're just going to want Sasha. So if Naomi showed up in the middle of the Rumble, I would think that you're going to get We Want Sasha chance. I think that they're synonymous with each other at this point because they walked out together. So I don't really think that that's the message that you want to send. If Naomi is being brought back and she is under contract, I would save her for after the Rumble just for the reason that I outlined prior. I don't think that you want to introduce a scenario where the fans convince themselves that Sasha is coming down the line, and then they end up disappointed when 30 goes off and it's not Sasha Banks, and they've worked themselves up into a frenzy that was completely needless. So,
yeah. Yep. All right. We'll keep rolling here and go to Brad in Florida next. Brad, thanks for calling. What's on your mind tonight?
Hey guys. You know, a little bit of a counterpoint to the argument that Cody, I'm just seeing all these vignettes week after week. You look at the poster and Cody's right in the middle, front and center for the Royal Rumble. And you see, you know, tonight they actually moved him to the side for Brock, who became front and center. But regardless, I think it's too obvious. And I think if Sami Zayn is in the Royal Rumble with WrestleMania, if you think of WrestleMania as sort of like the culmination of everything that's happened in the year, and then you kind of have a reset after WrestleMania or whatever it is, like, I don't see a way how you don't go with your biggest story in Sami Zayn. And what I would do to make things a little bit less obvious is I would have Sami win the Rumble, and I would actually have Cody win the Elimination Chamber. And I understand the Elimination Chamber is in Quebec, in Montreal, which is Sami Zayn's hometown, and you could obviously still have him play a gigantic angle in that show. But I could imagine, and I know, Brandon, you laid out some scenarios that you could see with Sami Zayn coming out there and telling Roman, well, you know, it's a great opportunity, and I want it, and I'm going to do it. But I could see it really being television gold with Roman being like, now I can kick my feet up, you know, relax, my man won the Rumble, blah, blah, blah. But then maybe over the weeks and weeks, he starts kind of treating Sami like garbage and starts kind of, you know, not being so nice and taking it as an afterthought, like, oh, Sami, he ain't going to do anything. He's a nothing, you know. He won it, but yeah, you know. I could just see it being so good, and I would actually have Cody win the Elimination Chamber and have them both in back-to-back nights at the Royal Rumble. I'm sorry, at WrestleMania. You still give Cody that WrestleMania moment against Roman. Maybe that is night one or night two. I don't know, but I just feel like I want your thoughts on that, but I also do feel like if Sami is at the end of the Rumble, which you know he will be if he's in it, you really create an opportunity where you can alienate a lot of people from or from Cody's side if you have him eliminate Sami Zayn. I mean, I think that would not be good for Cody at all. at all, I think he would be booed out of the building. Honestly, I don't think it would be a happy moment at all. And I think you really cannot do that. So I don't know how they're going to pull it off. And it's very interesting to me. And trust me, I see all your points about why Cody should win. But I want your thoughts on that. And then I just maybe have a follow-up really quick, too.
Well, I think there's more risk if they do what we said earlier, Brad, we don't think they're going to do, which is have Sammy in the match late. I don't know. You said we know that's going to happen. We said explicitly we don't think that's going to happen, that Cody and Sammy probably won't overlap in the Rumble, and they'll get Sammy out early if he's not winning, so that it then becomes even Sammy fans then convert to Cody fans and rooting for him as opposed to seeing Cody winning at the expense of Sammy. So if they have Sammy and Cody in late, I'm really curious what story they tell, and I think they're playing with fire a little bit. Because a fan base that adored Cody turned on him hard in AEW, and I don't think the scenario is the same or the fan base is the same, and just Cody hasn't been consistently on TV enough to annoy people like happened in AEW, or booked in a way that was sort of counterproductive with some wrestlers that fans liked more. A lot of things played into that Cody fan rebellion in AEW that's just not present in WWE. Check back in 2 years, we'll see. You know, hopefully Cody learned from it, and maybe it doesn't matter because it was such a unique set of circumstances in AEW. But you're still playing with fire if you put Cody out there with Sammy. Brandon.
Yeah, I think that I'll reference a show that I'm going to be talking about next week with Frank Pidiani and with Rich Van. And that's Royal Rumble 2003. They had a situation not totally unlike this, where you had the returning Shawn Michaels, who was incredibly over. It was his first Royal Rumble after returning to wrestling. And I think a lot of people were pointing to him as a potential Royal Rumble winner, and a lot of people wanted him to win. But, of course, you had the incoming Brock Lesnar, who was came off of losing the title to Big Show at Survivor Series and was obviously their pick to eventually go on and win that Royal Rumble. The way that they did that is the way that I envision them setting this situation up, and that is they cut an angle with Shawn Michaels in the middle of the Rumble match with Chris Jericho that led to Michaels' elimination, an untimely elimination, and set up the match between Michaels and Jericho at WrestleMania. So fans got the hope that they would see their hero Shawn Michaels come in and win the match. He gets screwed out of potentially winning the match, but the fans are now looking forward to the angle that they've cut, which is Jericho and Michaels, and they've got that match to look forward to at WrestleMania. So they're not completely rejecting the idea of another babyface, Brock Lesnar, coming in later in the match and eventually winning. I think that's how you have to handle this if Sammy's going to be in the Rumble. Sammy needs to come in early or in the middle of the match, and they need to cut some sort of angle and progress the storyline of the Bloodline on. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that this is the turn. This is where the Usos and or Solo or Paul Heyman's out there, whatever. This is not necessarily where they turn on Sami Zayn. I just mean that there needs to be a catalyst to Sami Zayn being eliminated that clearly points to advancement in the storyline so that the fans can look at it and say, okay, we can see what's going on here. We're going to tune in Monday or Friday, and then they can reset and get excited about Cody Rhodes.
Yep. I think that makes sense. So I'll provide back to you for any response to what we had to say.
Yeah, that's a perfect thing that I wanted to follow up with, because I think tonight Solo kicking Sammy in the face accidentally, which, by the way, didn't look too accidental. I'm not saying – I just think it was a botch a little bit. But Solo kicking Sammy in the face, I think that's a way that Sammy could get eliminated and make it very comfortable, where, you know, Sammy's Solo's in the Rumble, Sammy's holding someone up or something like that against the ropes, and Solo gives him a boot in the face by accident. And that also advances the storyline as well, because there's a little more infighting within the Bloodline, and you get Sammy out by someone who is, you know, it just makes it even more interesting. It weaves up more of a web. Do you guys think that kick in the face tonight was a foreshadowing for anything, or just a way to end this match or end that segment in a kind of weird way?
I think it was just – I think it'll be a, not a key piece, but a piece in how everybody involved in this reacts to each other based on that. But, I mean, it was so obviously, ostensibly intended for KO that it's hard for Sammy to make the case that it wasn't, even if it looks like it might have been aimed at Sammy or that Solo didn't pull up and he could have. It's so, you know, the plausible deniability for Solo is so strong that it isn't a definitive part of Sammy's journey and the decisions he makes. But it'll be referenced, I think, Brandon.
Yeah, definitely. And Sammy's taken shots on purpose before, too. So, I mean, it's going to be hard for him to justify, you know, or really be upset with Solo when it definitely was intended for KO. And the fact that Sammy on Monday was just very much willing to take the spike. So, I mean, he's not averse to you know, taking offense from the bloodline if it's going to advance their cause.
Yep. All right, Brad, anything else?
Well, when Roman said Saturday is your big test at the Royal Rumble, you know, I mean, there's only two things that test could be, right, guys? The test could either be help me beat Kevin Owens and make sure you're on my side, or B, go out there and win the Rumble so I don't have a freaking opponent. I can't see what C is. So it's either A or B. It has to be. And the other weird thing about the way tonight's match ended, I know it's totally inconsequential, but they didn't even ring the bell. Like, I didn't even know until Solo got the chair and hit him with it. I was like, oh, Solo's getting disqualified. That's it. And obviously there was no disqualification because I guess it already happened, but they did not ring the bell, which was another blunder. And I also think that table was supposed to break when Solo went on it. and Solo wisely got up and, you know, the big angle was Kevin hitting with the chair into the crowd. But I think that was there was a few botches in that last thing. I don't really care that much, whatever, it's fine. But a few botches that I noticed that I thought were pretty interesting tonight. And I'll leave you guys with this. There's four people that probably can win the Rumble, in my opinion. It's Cody Rhodes. It's The Rock. And I know they said The Rock is not in game shape and he's not ready, but I could see that still being under tight wraps and maybe it does actually occur. Seth Rollins or Sami Zayn. Those are the only four, in my opinion, that could win. Do you guys agree, or is there a fifth or a sixth that you could think of? And I'll listen. I'll hang up and listen. One last thing, Wade. I don't hang up and stop listening to the show after my call. I go right onto the internet stream. So I don't want you to think I'm some jerk who wants to hear myself talk and hangs right up. Yeah. Have a good night, guys. But I want to hear your opinion on that. Yeah.
Thanks, Brad. Appreciate it. Yes, it is fair to point out when people hang up as soon as their call is done. It doesn't mean they're not still listening. But you have to proclaim that, or I will assume you've left. Okay, what was I going to say? Oh, yeah, so I wrote my cover story in this week's Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, laying out, you know, who I thought would, you know, had a chance to win the Rumble and why and all that. And it essentially was, you know, I went over more wrestlers than just those four, but, you know, I'll just say this. If don't put hard-earned money on Rock winning the Rumble or even being in it. I'll just say that. As far as Sammy goes, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if he wins, but I'd be curious what happens next for Cody. That doesn't seem like they've decided not to push him. And Seth is a wild card, and I don't know how they could make sense of it, but I think they've done a decent job with Seth talking about wanting to get his hands on Roman, where it wouldn't feel completely out of left field. But yeah, the list is really short, Brandon.
Yeah, I mean, you can make a storyline case for Brock Lesnar because he's Brock Lesnar, but I don't think that, you know, there are many people out there who think that we're headed for Reigns and Roman again. I mean,
that's why storyline-wise, it's I mean, within the realm of WWE, if this were all real, of course Brock would be a favorite.
Right.
But from a business standpoint and looking at the way WWE operates, they're not going to build WrestleMania around another Brock Roman match. We've been there. We've done that. It's not been built up. And everything's pointing to Lesnar Lashley as a key feud.
Right. And that's the other thing that I was going to mention. Bobby Lashley is, of course, the other main eventer that's in the match. But it seems very clear that they are going to clash, probably eliminate a bunch of guys, and then eliminate each other. That just seems to be the direction that they're headed and headed, of course, for a match at WrestleMania. I'm very curious as to what Brock Lesnar's motivation for this feud with Bobby Lashley is, because I mean, like, he already beat him. What more does he want?
Yep.
It just seems, it seems a little strange right now. I'm hoping that they add more fuel to that fire. But outside of those guys, yeah, I mean, obviously there is the outliers. Like originally it was The Rock, and obviously, you know, reporting has pointed away from that direction. There was the rumors about Steve Austin, and again, you know, reporting has pushed away from that direction. Outside of that, it's the three suspects that we've really been talking about, with Seth Rollins being the furthest outlier. So, I mean, to me, it seems like it's those two. It's really Cody Rhodes and Sami Zayn. The one thing that I wonder, Wade, and I don't know if you have any inclination as to what would have been the plan here. You were talking about how you make not giving Cody Rhodes the main event not feel like some sort of demotion or indication that there isn't faith in him as a main event guy. What do you suspect would have been the plan or could have been the plan for Cody Rhodes if the Rock match had worked out?
I guess we would have seen a different story about Cody's comeback.
Yeah.
They would have planted seeds for something else, but I'd have to give it more thought to rewind, you know, basically 6 weeks to when they, you know, maybe Cody doesn't come back in the Rumble then.
Right.
You know, maybe they wait till after the Rumble. He comes out on Raw and says, I'm just about ready to come back. And then, you know, Karrion Kross shows up and, you know, punches him in the shoulder. I don't know. I mean, he would be in a lesser spot for sure. Yeah. Yeah. But I don't think they'd put him in the Rumble and have him lose and do a bunch of comeback videos if they had gotten Rock and Rock was going to win the Rumble.
Right.
Yeah. All right, cool. We'll go next to Ryan in Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, what have you got for us tonight?
I have a question on Rhea Ripley. They were talking about how Dominic is helping train with Rhea. Do you think there's any possibility that Dominic will be the one that helps Rhea Ripley win the Rumble?
Yes. I mean, I don't think it has to be that way, but I mean, people want to see Rhea Ripley and Dominic on camera together. The fact that Dom has been introduced, this is nickname, is wonderful. So, I mean, I think it would be weird for Rhea Ripley as a heel to win clean. You know, that's just not how WWE typically tells stories unless someone is just a dominant heel, and that's not Ripley's character. So, yeah, I would think her Dom will help. You agree, Brandon?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yep. Ryan, what else?
Same questions on this Cody Rhodes winning the Rumble. Do you think there's any possibility they could do a Lex Luger, Bret Hart finish and stretch this out like a Cody, Sami Zayn at the next pay-per-view since they're in Canada for the next pay-per-view?
Yes, but then you would put Cody in a position to be booed in a building to his win at WrestleMania, so it's not going to happen. Those things are hard to time, and it's not the most satisfying of finishes either. So,
boy, would he be booed!
I know, yeah, yeah. That you know, Ryan, if you had suggested that finish, like seriously suggested it at a booking meeting, and I was running WWE, I would probably silence you from now on.
Different scenario if they're not in Montreal.
Was that right?
Oh yeah, never mind. It wasn't on that.
Oh, okay.
But, okay, another question I had for you was on the female Royal Rumble. Jim Cornette says he refuses to watch the female Rumble because he has so lack of interest in it. Do you think there's a lot of WWE fans that feel that same way as Cornette?
No. No. I think you can have a lack of buildup and people are still going to want to watch. So, no, I don't think that's a widespread feeling. What else, Ryan?
Okay, final questions on Rey Mysterio. Wade Barrett was talking about the sand being pretty low on the glass for Rey's career. When do you see him wrapping up his career? Do you think he's got a couple more years left, or you think he'll go like another 5 years even?
You know, with the way he wrestles now, I mean, I don't think he has to retire anytime soon, but when he does, Brandon, I hope they make a really big deal out of it. I hope it's a really good opponent, a credible opponent. Rey can win or lose depending on circumstances. You don't have to win your retirement match to have it be memorable and effective and classy and a proper tribute to your career. But Rey should not go out quietly. without fanfare. Like, there should be fanfare for that career coming to an end in WWE.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, with the progress that Dominic has made, I mean, that's certainly an option down the line. If Dominic continues to be a really strong heel and he continues to grow in this role, I mean, he's someone that you certainly look to, and I'm sure that would be really special for both of them to say that Ray's last match was wrestling his son. I think that would be interesting, and they've certainly saved it. By having Ray, you know, transfer brands to get away from him, saying that he wouldn't actually do it. And I mean, there's ways to get into that match without it being, you know, a blood feud. So I think that's a strong possibility. As far as how long Ray has got left, like you said, Wade, I mean, the way that he wrestles now, it seems like it's sustainable for him, at least for, you know, as long as he feels like he can continue to do it. I know that he's had some pretty extensive knee surgeries. And I mean, like, there's the joke online, of course, that like he's basically got bionic knees at this point, which really, really honestly seems to be the case. I mean, he just doesn't seem to be showing any signs of, you know, his career worth of injuries.
Yep. All right. Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it.
Thanks for taking the call.
Sure thing. Yep. All right. Up next, Kyle in Baltimore, and then we're going to get to Javier for a roundtable segment to close out the show. Kyle, welcome. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
I'll talk more about the women's rumble. Let's talk about the men's rumble. I'll try to get to that. But I'll do a comparison. I think back to – I was thinking when Bianca Belair won the Rumble last year or 2 years ago. And that was an obvious choice of her being the face, Sasha and all that stuff, which is fine. I think what makes it different for Bianca than Rose is that Bianca was injured and Rose was, and to me, I view Rose still as a mid-carder because I don't buy him as a main eventer. Even if he does face Roman Reigns, I just think, as a storyline perspective, I could see Reigns say that you're just a big card type of thing, whatever type of storyline they'll do, whatever, that's the direction they plan on doing. And like you said earlier, they put Sami Zayn in the match, in the Rumble match on tomorrow with, you know, part of Fallout 4 with Rhodes, then that's a bad mistake. She should not be in a Rumble at all. She should not be even seen in a Rumble match. So that's what I would think for Sami Zayn. But with the women themselves, do you think there's a chance for because everyone's kind of like hell bent to think it's going to be Cody Rhodes and Rhea Ripley, but if Rhea Ripley does, which I hope I would be fine if Rhea wins because that's fine. What do you think the direction for the rest of the women, like, for what we think, like, for, like, Becky Lynch, for example, what is she going to be doing heading into WrestleMania, what expected, like, the street with Bayley be over with, all that stuff, because she has been really cold since this feud with Bayley started. So what do you think that's going to go?
Brandon, have you thought through how you think the key women are going to, where they're going to land on WrestleMania based on, you know, what we see tomorrow night?
Yeah, I mean, Ripley winning kind of puts Becky in a precarious position, and that has been something that I've given some consideration to. I don't see a great option for Becky that jumps out right now, and that's whether she wins the Rumble or doesn't, because I think that, you know, they've told the story with Bianca Belair and Becky Lynch, and they are on good terms now with both women being babyfaces. I don't think that that's a match you want to go to. We, of course, have seen Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair a great number of times. Charlotte Flair is still being presented as a babyface. I don't know if you want to turn her again this quickly, while I do certainly think that Flair is a better heel overall. I think that they need to pick a direction and stick with it. So the fact that they've chosen babyface for the time being makes me think they should just ride it out for a while. So I don't necessarily want to see a turn there. That kind of puts Becky in no woman's land. I mean, they're not going to go back to a Bayley feud. They're finishing up with that. So yeah, it's tough. It's tough to imagine where Lynch ends up at WrestleMania. I don't know if maybe they've got a legend in that spot that could maybe come in, but again, like you're talking Trish or Lita are really the two big ones that come to mind. And again,
maybe the Rumble.
Oh, I had a thought actually.
Actually,
about to step in. Yeah.
Hold on, Kyle. Hold on.
Okay.
I think that maybe the earlier suggestion of a Luger Brett finish could come into play. Maybe there's co-winners and we get a triple threat.
Yeah, I think that certainly is a possibility. Because I don't think that you want to throw Becky Lynch to the side because she is such a big star, and I think it posed a problem in the last few months with Bianca Belair's title reign, where even though Belair was the champion, it felt like she was at times bigfooted by Becky Lynch because Becky Lynch is the biggest star in the division. And so having a title match that doesn't include Becky Lynch would potentially present a problem. The one area where I think you get around that is if Ronda Rousey is still available. If Rousey is available as a heel, then I think you can return to the match with Becky Lynch. That was what looked like was in the cards last year. That was the match that should have happened in New York back in 2019. So they still have that. They still have that in their pocket. It won't be nearly as hot as it once was, but it is an option.
All right, Kyle, appreciate it. Anything else you want to bring up?
So I guess for the whole, you know, this tag team championship tournament thing that they're doing. It was weird to me like 3 weeks ago when the WWE didn't win the titles. I really assumed that they would because I just like, again, why would they even put these titles separately on a line all of a sudden where they're doing this and if it's just going to end up probably being Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens based on the uses of WrestleMania. Then they put these titles together. What's the point of breaking them up and doing these tournaments if they're not going to really break them up? Really, that's not what they want to do. So, what do you think is that? Are they going to break up the titles, or they're just doing it to kill TV time and then wait till WrestleMania for Sammy and Owens? That's the direction for them to face at WrestleMania.
Yeah, I've thought about it, and I don't have a clear answer. I'm perplexed a little bit. I think it was weird that only one of the belts was defended on Raw, the Raw belts, and they didn't really even draw a lot of attention to it. It almost was like they're setting a precedent for potential future defenses that are just one belt or the other, one set of belts or the other. Brandon, what's your expectation and trajectory there? And you're going to expand that into the men's titles too, because, I mean, there was talk for a while, and I don't think it can be ruled out. Maybe we'll get Sammy against Roman and Cody against Roman on back-to-back nights, even if Rock isn't in the mix, which I am expecting he isn't based on my sourcing.
Yeah, I was thinking one of two things. The first being kind of what Kyle suggested, and that they're filling TV time. And that is typically the go-to when you have a tournament on WWE TV. They rarely mean a whole lot. But they do fill a lot of TV time, which is something that they have a lot of. So that is always my initial thought. But in the back of my head, I'm thinking that what you mentioned, Wade, is also a possibility in that they're trying to, on a lesser degree, a lesser level with the tag team titles, establish precedent that the titles can be defended independently so that they can return to this with Roman Reigns.
Yeah. Yep. All right, cool. Kyle, thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
Sounds good. All right, let's have time here for Javier. We'll start with the jingle. PW Torch contributor Javier Machado filled in covering Impact the last couple of weeks. Thank you for that, Javier. Darren Lilly back this week covering Impact. And now we're going to talk some SmackDown and some Rumble. Welcome.
Hey, Wade. Hey, Brandon. How's it going, guys?
Good.
Good. I'm just wondering, Javier, your introduction jingle is a little bit shorter than Sean's. Do you feel slighted?
Don't remind me. this may have come up. I have a treat for you, Wade. My mom was on hand to watch the SmackDown. So I have some opinion from her.
Awesome. Well, I thought you were going to put her on the show.
She's
That's like, you got to clear that with me ahead of time. No, I'm joking.
She, you're probably going to claim that I'm just, you know, playing a role. Her favorite two wrestlers were Rey Mysterio and Kevin, as she called him. She just called him Kevin. those were her two favorites.
Awesome.
Based on some of her comments, I think her other two favorites might have been Karrion Kross and Drew McIntyre for completely other reasons.
interesting.
Every single time, lots of heat for Bordeaux. Every single time she came on screen, she says, "Estoy hasta aquí con esta puta rubia." I'm over this blonde bitch. Like every single time she was on the screen,
awesome.
She hated her. She was impressed by the size of the crowd, and was a bit confused when like 30 wrestlers started coming out one after the other. I explained to her it's because they're promoing the Royal Rumble for tomorrow. Because she had no idea why it was just like a parade of wrestlers just interrupting each other. So those were like the big her big things during that. So oh, and she also
now what
when Lacey Evans came good.
No, you go ahead.
And when Lacey Evans came out, she said that she doesn't understand why she doesn't like women's wrestling, because she likes women's boxing and women's MMA. But for some reason, she doesn't like women's wrestling. She thinks it looks too fake. So she was not she's not a fan of women's wrestling.
How many shows has she been to before?
Well, she hasn't been to any, but she used to watch it when she was little in Cuba. Well, Lucha Libre specifically when she was little in Cuba. So she is aware of it. And you know, whenever she's going through the channels and there's any kind of fight or you know something, she watches a lot of boxing and occasional MMA. And every now and then she'll you know just like leave you know it particularly if there's like anything like lucha related, she usually stays there. Every now and then, like if there's like a really like you know what I would consider a 5-star match, I would you know show her, particularly because she's more of a fan of the high flyers and you know the lucha style. Overall, so whenever there's like a match like that, I'll every now and then I'll bring it to her. But this is like the first time she's ever sat down and watched a full show.
Fun. And why? Why did she go?
Yeah. Huh?
Why did
she
go? What was the occasion?
No, she was here and I had it on, and you know, we just watched it. So.
Ah, gotcha. Okay, I got you.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I see. What else is on your mind, Javier?
Yeah, so,
it's a big weekend.
There's a really we're talking about like Sami Zayn in the Royal Rumble. Do we know if he's going to even make it to the Royal Rumble? Because I'm pretty sure the Roman Reigns match is probably going to happen before the Men's Royal Rumble, and if it does, events could happen to take him out of it altogether. Could also set up if they're going to go the Sammy route. It's very simple to have Sammy help Roman win, so everybody thinks that okay, he's you know they're all celebrating in the ring with him, and then that's when Roman gives his thumbs down, and then the Bloodline takes Sammy out, and then Sammy comes back at the end of the show, wins the Rumble. And says, "Well, now you know you sold me out, you betrayed me, and now I'm coming for the title."
What do you think, Brandon?
Yeah, it's certainly possible. I think Javier, when you brought up the fact that you know, you think that it's possible that Sammy doesn't make it to the Rumble, and I'm just thinking, like, the one caveat I'd say with that is that if they don't, like, find a way to really write him off, like, to make it physically impossible for him to be in the match, I think people are going to think he's going to be in the match. I just think that if Cody is going to win, they need to do everything possible to mitigate the crowd taking over in favor of Sammy over Cody Rhodes. And to me, that means having him in the match and being clearly eliminated via, you know, some storyline advancement. Because I still think you run the risk of having the same issue if he's in the match and he just gets unceremoniously tossed out like he's an afterthought. I think that's also a problem. That's why I've been harping on the idea that he needs to be eliminated by some storyline advancement one way or the other, so the crowd still gets the satisfaction of feeling like they're part of advancement of the story, and they have permission, so to speak, to move on to Cody Rhodes. I just fear that if he's not in the match at all, they're going to spend the whole match wondering when he's going to show up.
Yeah. Javier?
Yeah. My thing was mainly if he's going to win, that is because some of the callers said that they don't know how, you know, the story moves on from there. Questioning like, you know, oh, you know, maybe does he lay down for him or whatever, but this is a way that you can just straight up shoot it to the, you know, you think that he's out, and then, you know, he ends up coming in and ends up winning the thing. I think that'd be a huge, you know, moment for the crowd. Plus what Tom Martin talked about, that, you know, when the bloodline, you know, because right now people like the bloodline, even though they're, you know, offensively healed, and they want to see, you know, Sami Zayn with them. But, you know, once they turn on Sammy, you know, they'll be the ones who go full blown heel. So at that point, you know, seeing Sami Zayn, you know, triumphantly show back up at the Royal Rumble and win it, that's, you know, a way to get up there if you're going to give it to him. Yeah, I mean the only other way that you may possibly get away with it and like just having him out of the Rumble altogether is if it's like a severe enough beating where you see him being taken out in an ambulance, you know, to that point, and then like, you know, have, you know, and even in ring, you know, in during the show specifically, you know, talk about like, oh, you know, he's, you know, being looked at by, you know, at a local medical facility, and make sure you hammer that point home so that people realize that he's not going to be, you know, there, and then, you know, put together a good Rumble. Because also if it's a good exciting Rumble, that's usually when you get in trouble, is when, you know, you have those low spots and those boring spots. You know, that's when people start, you know, getting into their heads to do stuff. So, you know, I agree with you, Brandon, that you remove him out of the story early if he's going to be, you know, out of the ring early, even before Cody shows up, if that were the case. You know, if he's going to be in the Rumble but eliminated, or, you know, otherwise you have to take him on in a specific way, or, you know, you win. I think that's your three shots. And, yeah, I mean, my top five were Rock, which, you know, you've dashed my hopes with. Rock,
yeah.
Cody, Sami Zayn, Seth Rollins, and Brock Lesnar. And Brock Lesnar's just there because I need the fifth, and he's Brock Lesnar. So,
yeah, yeah.
You know, I'm not even sure if I got five for the women. So,
although no, there shouldn't be.
I did bring up the chance that you might end up getting a Becky Bailey double elimination at the end, so that, you know, to either them having to have a match to determine who's going to be the actual winner, or, you know, a triple threat. I could see, and I know we hate triple threats, but a triple threat between Becky, Charlotte Flair, and Bailey kind of makes sense. You know, so, you know, because of their history. So I could see in particular, this is like part of the story between Lynch, and I'm actually selling myself more on this right now. Part of the story between Lynch and Bayley is the fact that Bayley kind of feels left behind when the four horsewomen, you know, went to the main roster. She was the one left behind, so that's part of the drama in there. And Charlotte Flair would have been part of that group, so it would make, you know, so it kind of makes, like, I'm kind of really much more selling myself that's going to be the way they're going. Triple threat match at WrestleMania.
Or if they hadn't thought of it and they're listening, they're like, that's what we can do. How ironic would it be? It'd be my fault for a triple threat match at WrestleMania.
There, I think there's also consideration to you know, what side's going to get the Elimination Chamber match, because what they have typically done and what I suspect they'll do again is whatever brand doesn't win the Women's Royal Rumble will then have an Elimination Chamber match to decide the opponent for the other champion. So I guess they could also do a scenario if they ultimately wanted to get to a situation where they have, for example, Bianca Belair face both Becky Lynch and Rhea Ripley, as we talked about earlier, Wade, you could still have a clean Rumble winner in Rhea Ripley or Becky Lynch, and then have the winner of the Elimination Chamber somehow force her way into that match rather than going after Charlotte Flair.
Yep. All right, yeah, Javier, what else?
And the only reason, because I do have Rhea Ripley as my top two between her and Becky, but the reason I have Becky actually higher than Rhea Ripley, I think most people would have it reversed, just because I do think that it's she has an opponent in Beth Phoenix, ready for that, and I would rather so I'd rather see that happen before she wins the championship, and it'd be like the step that gets her to the next level to prepare for the championship, and maybe have her be coordinated champion at like SummerSlam, and start building up towards that point, because right now she hasn't really been involved with the women. She's been involved in the Judgment Day storyline. So, you know, have her go through some, you know, have not only, you know, take out, you know, Beth Phoenix, and then, you know, maybe somebody else on her way to defeating Belair, on the way there.
Yeah, Brandon.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I do think that the Beth Phoenix option is a good one for Ripley. They've definitely set the stage for that. And it also makes me wonder, on the men's side of things, the Rumble is probably a pretty good time to reintroduce Edge for WrestleMania season. But I'm just kind of wondering, where does he fit in? Like, what can they have for him that feels like a WrestleMania worthy match? I mean, they've done the Judgment Day stuff ad nauseum. I mean, they can't really possibly go back to Finn Balor at this point. So where does that leave Edge?
I know, Karrion Kross. Something like that.
No. I'm thinking likely Edge and Beth Phoenix versus Dominic Rhea somewhere along the lines. Maybe not at WrestleMania.
Yeah,
but
and I mean, that would
chamber.
It just feels like I think for WrestleMania purposes, because they've done the tag match with Edge and Beth before, it really should be Beth and Rhea if that's the direction they go, and that just kind of leaves Edge as an odd person out. Because, I mean, he's just been involved with the Judgment Day for a year now. I mean, they've got to move him away from that, and I just don't know, you know, where. I don't know. I don't know what you do with him.
Has it only been a year,
Bray?
Created the Yeah, I know. Yeah, it'll be a year at WrestleMania, but it feels like it's been, you know, like since he returned.
Because I think it's because he'll fight them, then get taken out by them for months, and come back and fight them and get taken out for months.
Fight them again, and beat them every time.
It just feels that this is. I almost feel like this is like when we were still in the Thunderdome era when this started. I don't know why. It feels like it's been that old.
Yeah, it kind of does.
Yeah, I'm curious on the whole Hurt Business thing, because, you know, reports are that Lashley's been pushing hard for the Hurt Business thing we have now. All of a sudden, Lesnar showing up to attack Lashley. I'm wondering if when they do form the Hurt Business, the stuff that's happening to Lashley now is actually being manipulated by MVP, and that the reason that Lesnar's attacking Lashley is because MVP is paying Lesnar. And then eventually Lashley's going to have to get together the Hurt Business himself to, you know, essentially have the Hurt Business of Bobby Lashley, Benjamin, and Cedric versus Almos and Lesnar, and that's pretty much all you really need.
Yeah, what do you think of that, Brandon?
Yeah, I think it's possible.
Hello?
All right, I think we're reconnecting, and let's see if get Javier back. Yeah, so we got disconnected, Javier. We'll clean that up in post. But what was the last thing you heard?
Brandon started talking about my thing about the Hurt Business. That I think that MVP might not actually be the one trying to get the Hurt Business together, but is basically manipulating Lashley.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess go ahead and just move to the next topic if you got one.
Okay. Give me a second so I can.
That was our version of the pitch black, Matt.
Okay, I could go there. I'm really enjoying LA Knight and the way that he's handling this storyline. He's true to his character, and you know, and that's the thing. He's adapting his character to the storyline of what Bray Wyatt's doing, and I think that's like what hurts certain wrestlers is where they haven't had, particularly Seth Rollins. That's the one that was most obvious, is that Seth Rollins, and if you remember back then, Seth Rollins, you were pretty much running, Wade, you were pretty much running to the ground the who is Seth freaking Rollins? Because that was about every single show. And that's the thing. So then, you know, since he didn't have a strong character at that point, you know, the Fiend just ate him alive. The Fiend stuff just ate him alive. But I think LA Knight just, you know, sticking by his guns and being, you know, this braggadocious, I'm the best, you know, I see through your gimmicks, yet still, you know, when being confronted with the stuff he's been confronted with, is also still a little bit like apprehensive of, like, you know, not in like I'm cowering in fear, but more like what's going on, I'm in danger, you know, and I don't know where it's coming from kind of way. So I think LA Knight's handling this whole thing very well.
Yeah, Brad, we haven't talked a lot about it. What do you think of the segment tonight and what Javier had to say?
Yeah, I think that LA Knight has taken this from feeling like just a quick feud to get Bray Wyatt on track against a heel that was clearly beneath him to a point where he feels like he's at Bray Wyatt's level, and you know, in some cases has outperformed Wyatt and outshined him. The crowd is clearly, you know, getting with LA Knight, even if they don't, you know, they're not necessarily cheering him as a babyface, but they are very much latching on to the gimmick. And I thought that he did a really great job tonight when, you know, they responded to him when they started chanting what he more or less encouraged them to chant. And then he immediately told them to shut up. I just think he's doing really good work. I think the yeah is hilarious. And like, I might regret saying that in a few weeks. Like, I might get tired of it, but for right now, I think it's great. I just think he's doing really good work. On the flip side, I was a little disappointed with Bray tonight, just because it feels like for a while when Uncle Howdy was first introduced, it really felt like this version of Bray Wyatt was sort of ditching the supernatural undertones and kind of shedding that skin and trying very hard to turn his back on that side of himself. And that was him resisting the urge to sort of fall into the trap of Uncle Howdy. And tonight it just kind of felt like they went back to the creepy, like, oh, Bray Wyatt just appeared in a rocking chair on top of the stage. And last week, reintroducing the Firefly Funhouse. Like, they're going back to a lot of the supernatural elements of the character, which to me is muddying the water between Bray Wyatt and Uncle Howdy.
Javier?
Well, I'm glad you brought up the Firefly Funhouse thing, because what I'm enjoying mostly, because I like the fact that the stuff that he's saying works on two levels, on a meta and also, like, you know, in universe way. The Firefly Funhouse, when he basically just playing a role there, and then at the end of it, he basically snaps out of that character and essentially telling, and we don't know who he's talking to, because he's talking to three people at once. He's talking to Uncle Howdy, he's talking to LA Knight, and he's talking to the fans. And he's saying, this is what you wanted. This is what you want, right? You know, in a way, because that I think is his gimmick. And I think that Uncle Howdy is essentially a surrogate for the audience. You know, because he's saying, you know, you want me to come back as the Fiend. I don't want, you know, like you said, Brandon, I don't want to, you know, return to that. But this is what you want. You keep calling for this. Now, he's basically talking to LA Knight, saying that, you know, he wants to fight me. So from that perspective. But towards Uncle Howdy, which, again, I think is the audience thing, is he's saying that you want me to be this dark side. You want me to be the cult leader mind game guy. You want me to be the Fiend. This is what you want me to be, you know, because the Firefly Funhouse first starts as, you know, him being him, you know, the thing, but then, like, he takes that more serious thing, and he's like, be careful what you wish for. So I'm really curious. I'm like equal excited and apprehensive for the match tomorrow. To see what direction they go. I'm not heartened by the fact that it's a trademarked match. So, you know, I mean, and the last time they really pushed a trademarked match was that Army of the Dead zombie thing where they ate Miz and Morrison, the debacle. I'm really, you know, worried and concerned about that for the Rumble. I mean, is that going to be worse than the Army of Darkness? I don't think. But and the fact that it is, you're playing with lights. That the whole red tinge thing was another thing I didn't, you know, that didn't really work well for the Fiend matches. I'm really apprehensive about what they're going to do.
Yeah. Yep. All right, cool. Anything else you want to bring up, Javier?
Let's see if there's anything specific about the Rumble that I had in mind. In terms of, when, is there any, can you, either you two think of any women legend that might be someone who can win?
Doudrop. on a semi-serious note, I mean, there are some women who have been inactive lately, who there's been, you know, rumblings about, you know, coming back, who are just, you know, people who have been in NXT or WWE getting recast. So I think that could be part of the mix. I don't think any of them are a level where I'd expect them to win. But as far as, like, the names from the past go, I mean, I think the novelty of just seeing, you know, Michelle McCool, whatever, you know, just like people who were Kelly types who were part of the past come in and get eliminated has lost some of its luster. So we'll see kind of, I'm curious what the mix is and the tone that they're going for. But I mean, it just, it would be pretty close to guesswork slash unneeded spoiler at this point to say one way or the other. It'd either be a guess or why take away the surprise? Yeah, I don't know. Brandon, anyone come to mind?
Well, I mean, you missed the most obvious one here, Wade. I mean, clearly, Lacey Evans. We're on push, what, 5, 6, yeah. Repackaging how many times now? And she gets the big squash victory on SmackDown to no reaction. I mean, clearly, she's the front runner here.
And obviously, I mean, I have not been able to rule out that Sasha Banks, Naomi, Nia Jax, like some of these people who were let go will be brought back, and that they've you know, worked things out, and that there's a big moment planned. So, I mean, there could be some twists and turns like that where it will look back and go, well, Rhea Ripley was the only one because there weren't a lot of options, or Becky and Rhea. But obviously they had something up their sleeve planned. Nothing real specific comes to mind where I'm like, ah, that's the perfect thing. And I think there's a chance it'll happen.
Yeah, the only one I really was thinking about was maybe Trish Stratus, but both title holders right now are baby faces. Although, you know, Charlotte.
And I feel we've been there and done that with Trish, and it was sort of like not great. I mean, it wasn't awful, but it's just like they're not going to go back to that. I don't think I'm giving the WrestleMania payday.
Yeah, no, because the only one I thought would be cool would be Mickie James. If they would do a sort of like, you know, because she in Impact has been on the last rodeo and which ended with her winning the women's title, the current Knockouts champion for Impact Wrestling. And then maybe like, you know, cause, you know, it, I think that she is, you know, closer to the end than even though the whole if she loses the match she retires stipulation is done, maybe give her like a WrestleMania moment. They're not going to do that with an Impact star, but that was something I was just, you know, considering if there was somebody out there and the only one I could come up with was either Trish or Nikki, and I don't really want to see Nikki but Nikki Bella, not Nikki Bella. I think that might be it. Check out the primer for more thoughts and stuff. And
absolutely.
At the time where I wrote it, there were only 7 announced women. That might be a little bit rocky. I mean, still, I think there's only, 4 more announced today?
I don't even know.
I'm scrolling through the rosters right now, and I mean, like, they don't even have enough active women on the roster to fill the Rumble. So, like, right. I mean, obviously there are going to be surprises or NXT call-ups or legends or what have you. I mean, there are definitely a couple of women who haven't been on TV in a while who are, you know, just members of the main roster who could come back repackaged or just reintroduced that could be at least interesting additions to the match. None of them strike me as potential winners in any way, but certainly, like, Nikki Cross, who we haven't seen in a while, could certainly come back. I know that Asuka was stepping away for a bit. I know she's been talked about as a potential person in the match. Carmella, someone we haven't seen in quite a long time. So there are definitely women on the roster who could show up as surprise returns, but none of them strike me as someone who will, you know, have a chance to win.
All right, cool. Javier, thanks. Everybody check out his primer for the Royal Rumble on pwtorch.com, so people know where to go.
Sorry, stepped on you. Sorry about that. Have a good night.
Thanks, Javier. Say hi to your mom for us. Thanks. All right, Brandon, we can wrap on that note. We went long, but hey, it's the night before the Royal Rumble, so a lot to talk about. I assume there's nothing else jumping out that you needed to touch on?
The only thing that I was going to bring up that we didn't talk about is all week I was hearing people and you and Todd and Jason and some others comment on, you know, the way that the segment on Monday came off with the bloodline.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I would just add to that, and I don't think that this completely forgives, you know, sort of that missing chapter that you've talked about at length. But I think one of the important things to note, and maybe someone else has brought this up, but if you go back and you watch that closing segment from last week's SmackDown, and Kevin Owens comes in and he uses the chair on the bloodline, and he puts Roman through the table, and then Sammy runs in late to make the save, and Owens runs up through the crowd, and they have the stare down moment. There's a couple of minutes there, right, as the show is going off the air, where Paul Heyman is not concerned with the carnage of the bloodline in the ring and the fact that his tribal chief has just been put through the table. He is staring a hole through Sami Zayn, and he cannot take his eyes away from Sami. And he has this look on his face like he's just in that moment come to the realization that the call is coming from inside the house. And I think that is what they were going for there. They didn't communicate it on Raw, but the moment was there. I think that they told the chapter that we think is missing, I think it was there. It just wasn't expanded upon on Monday, because Heyman's facial expression, his body language, told the story. I think that he came to the realization in that moment that Zayn, or at least his opinion, is that Zayn came to the ring late, that Sammy could have made the save earlier, but let Kevin Owens take out the bloodline before running out.
Well, I'll throw this in there, because we got an email from Jersey Joe about this, and he said, Wade, I've been listening to your podcast this week, as I typically do, and felt compelled to email after multiple segments were dedicated to the lack of continuity in the bloodline storyline. I think you're misreading the Heyman Roman Reigns backstage segment from Friday night. Roman was furious with Sammy, and Heyman had not been pleasant toward him at all. The reason Roman calmed down and called Sammy back was not because he cooled off and legitimately changed his mind. It was a defense mechanism to make sure he didn't push Sammy to the other side on the same night as the contract signing with KO, as that would have been a very dangerous time to push Sammy away. I don't quite get why, but that's neither here nor there, I guess. The reconciliation was not real. Heyman's entire pissing out of the castle instead of pissing in speech was simply designed as self-preservation, making sure the threat remained at bay and by your side throughout this potentially problematic night. Again, I'm not sure what the problem is. Could have been. Additionally, Heyman did shoot daggers at Sammy at the end of the night while he looked up at KO escaping through the crowd. There you go, Brandon. It was subtle, but it was certainly there. So having said all this, I do agree that it should have been made a little clearer for casual fans, or even just as a reminder before the segment on Raw. But I also don't think we should be spending hours tearing apart the continuity of something that actually makes plenty of sense, albeit in a very subtle and hint-hint sort of way. Hope you don't let this 1 week of TV ruin your appreciation for this all-time great storyline. Cheers and enjoy the Rumble. No, certainly it doesn't ruin anything. The issue is that they needed to address what happened and cover it at the beginning of Raw. And I offered that up in my critique, that all they needed is a segment of them getting out of the limo and, you know, some interviewer running up and saying, you know, Paul, we saw you staring down Sammy. Sammy was late, but hey, Roman sent him to do other work. How can you hold that against him? And have Heyman give an explanation. It might not have sounded fair, but it would have. People shouldn't have to, at the end of a show, be paying attention to facial expressions and then draw a bunch of conclusions in a storyline that frankly is, I think, more nuanced slash potentially confusing for fans based on what they're used to watching, because it's not broad brush strokes or hitting you over the head with obvious stuff. There's all kinds of false statements being made to Sammy for ulterior motives, and you can't just assume the audience figured it all out on Friday and went into Monday with a bunch of dots being connected and assumptions being made that they're, as viewers, not usually asked to make. And so I stand by the fact that, yes, there was a story there to tell. I said there is a story there to tell. They just didn't tell it.
Yeah.
And that's not pro wrestling the way WWE usually does things. So, I mean, it's not that it didn't make sense that Heyman doesn't like Sammy, but it didn't make sense that they didn't explain why he kept seeming like he was messing with Sammy, but really on his side, trying to play a peacemaker. And in the end, we know what Heyman wants is whatever Roman wants. And so it all comes back to Roman but they needed to make it clear that Roman unfairly was holding it against Sammy, that he was getting the jet warmed up and wasn't able to be there to help out Roman during the contract signing as soon as they'd like. But that just wasn't covered. I think everyone just thought, well, you know, how could Roman blame Sammy when Roman gave Sammy another task? It's Roman's fault. Boom. End of story. No more thought put to it. And then, boom, all of a sudden a weekend goes by. All this apparently has happened in their heads or in their planning or in private meetings, and the announcers aren't even pointing any of it out. The announcers aren't even going, wait a second. Last week, Paul and Roman are saying this, and now they're saying this. Like, they just – the point wasn't that it doesn't make sense. The point was there was a chapter missing in connecting those dots.
Yeah, I think all that they would have needed to do, at least for me, and I mean, maybe you wanted more out of it, but – for me, I would have been pleased if they, like you said, had Heyman speak to whoever, Megan Morant, when they were arriving on Monday, and just say, you know, I saw what I needed to see on Friday night. And like I said earlier, you know, the call was coming from inside the house. He comes to the realization in that moment that Sami Zayn has not been on their side, whether he's right or not. It's just the assessment he has made in that moment because Zayn was late getting out there to help.
Yes. And all along, I thought that the way to fix this was not time-consuming or difficult,
yeah,
which made it all the more frustrating because
right,
they
right.
easily could have done it. Because I think the impression people got Friday is Heyman was advocating for keeping Sammy in the bloodline. And Monday, he's the lead guy pointing out this out-of-context argument for him being out. And that needed a little more explaining. I think that would have been needed to connect the dots because they did have on everything else they did with the story. And they just missed that beat in the rhythm of this story. And I think they would admit that they did. And I think they would concede that there was an augmentation of the original plans that they regret, and it's not a big deal. But for a storyline that's been so well cared for, I think 2020 hindsight would be, yeah, we in our excitement to do the things we were excited about, we forgot about something that in our head made sense, but we didn't convey in the usual way we convey things between shows.
Yeah. Unfortunately, in the end, it does a disservice to the acting work that Heyman did, because I thought he conveyed the message so incredibly well. It's just that they needed to expand upon it. I mean, you can't have a character, you know, come to a realization via a facial expression and then not later banned upon what that realization was. That was the step that they missed.
Yep, agreed. All right, cool. Brandon, thanks. Look forward to your coverage tomorrow night.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be a whole lot of fun. I'll have full coverage of the Rumble up tomorrow. And then, look for a special little treat next week too with Frank Pettiani for his show WWE Then and Now. I'll be talking with him and Rich Fan next week, and really looking forward to it. I'll also have for that show, because we're talking about Royal Rumble 2003, I will be giving Frank some pictures that I took at the event. That's actually why I'm working with him on this particular episode, is because I was in the building for Royal Rumble 2003 20 years ago now.
Awesome.
And I just dug out a whole bunch of pictures that I took on a 35mm camera. They're not great, but it is very cool for nostalgia purposes to look back and scan those to share with people.
That is awesome. Frank's Pro Wrestling Then and Now show is a VIP exclusive. He earlier this month dropped the Royal Rumble 98 review. And before that, it was Starrcade 97. Before that, Survivor Series 97. Before that, Survivor Series 2002. And on and on. It's just fun, roughly hour and a half, 2 hour look backs at pay-per-views through a modern lens. So another reason to go VIP, people. And also, by the way, I should have said this earlier, but check out our YouTube channel during the Royal Rumble. I believe there'll be a watch-along, and you can subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/PWTorch. Thanks again, Brandon. Talk to you, or we'll hear from you in print tomorrow night.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for having me.
Yep. Thanks, everybody.